This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
It's World Wide Wave time, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. You've got with you Dean and myself, Matt, taking you around the world. And tonight, we're travelling to where millions of eyeballs are currently fixed, on Brazil. Bronzed, buff bodies and beaches, extensive LGBT rights that are the envy of many countries, and the largest gay parties in the world. Is this gay paradise? If it is, why are gay people more likely to be murdered here than anywhere else in the world? And with the World Cup spotlight on Brazil, what is the legacy that will be left for the people of Brazil from this enormous sporting spectacle? To answer these questions tonight, we're talking to David Chong, an Australian born of Chinese acrobat parents who has lived much of his life in Brazil. And he's telling his story in a new and very intimate show called Acrobat, A Dining Tale. And we're also speaking with Evandra Maiar, Mr. Gay Brazil, about being macho in Brazil. We are going gaily forward to Brazil, where we're looking at some fun, fast facts. Now, interestingly, homosexuality has been legal since 1830.
Is anyone gasping in shock? Haven't you seen Mardi Gras?
It's still a very long time. Very long time.
Still not surprised.
And this Brazil actually has over 300 active LGBT organisations. So really strong. I know, I'm not really selling it. Okay, can I give you another one? According to the Guinness Book of World Records, Sao Paulo Gay Pride is the world's biggest LGBT celebration. 4 million people come out to watch this event. David, have you been to Sao Paulo Pride?
No, I have never been to Sao Paulo Pride. I'm from Belo Horizonte, which is the third largest city. And the place is full of openly gay people, but also people who would do it on the slide.
Ooh, okay. So we're going to explore that one a bit further.
Very much so.
Some really interesting stats that come out of Brazil in terms of people coming out. So there was a survey done in 2010 looking at people coming out and their experiences. 95% of homosexual youth have revealed their homosexuality by the age they're 16. That's very, very young.
It is and is not, when age of consent is actually way lower. And also The embracement of one's sexuality is very open, although also incredibly sort of rigid.
And that openness also leads to people as you say, openly accepting that they're gay. So 19.3% of the male population of Rio de Janeiro identifies as gay or bisexual. Again, that's a pretty... Whew.
But everything is done through a heteronormative sort of framework. You have to keep this in mind, that although people
gay
are open,
but macho.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who is you did that very well. Your voice dropping there. You know, okay, we'll all speak like this.
Who is passive and who is active? You know? Us in chopsticks, who is the fork and who is the
Latin macho thing.
Oh, yeah. Yes, very much so.
Now, there's no laws forbidding lesbian, gay and bisexual people from being a part of the Brazilian armed forces, which is interesting. And same-sex adoption is also very legal. Now, the big news of late has been civil unions and same-sex marriage. So civil unions came in 2011, a vote of 10-0, so quite resounding. But that was followed up in 2013 when the justices of the National Council of Brazil legalised same-sex marriage. Again, the vote 14-1 in favour of that, and they became the first country in Latin America to recognise same-sex unions for immigrants who
let's
come
all
in as
move
well.
To Brazil.
It's pretty tempting, isn't it?
It is.
The downside?
Oh, I knew there had to be
yeah,
one.
Yeah, we did allude to it. Anti-gay violence. So it is... It's one of the most violent places in the world in terms of measured by the number of murders and flowing from that, the number of homophobic murders. So there's varying numbers that get bandied about, but one that's sort of respected is around 238 murders a year, homophobic murders. David, does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. Again, it is actually done in a heteronormative way. So people, there was one time, long time ago, that being having a kind of a heterosexual panic with a gay person sort of making advance.
They cracked onto you?
Crack onto you. You would have actually the right to actually use that as an excuse to hurt somebody really badly.
Interestingly, maybe this is a sign that there might be some change there, because in 2012, a survey showed 77% of Brazilians support the explicit criminalisation of homophobia. Do you think people have maybe had enough?
Yeah, very much so. Although the population supports it, it doesn't mean that the law, even if the law is in place, it doesn't mean that people follow the law, because it is given that the law is made to be broken in Brazil.
It's encouraged, would you even say?
It is institutionalized.
Or not respected?
No, it's not respected. Okay. It is a defiance of the Brazilian. So you have the law, you go against it.
Ah, we're talking
about one of
the
largest
sport.
Corrupt. It's part of everything. It's just part of being Brazilian sometimes.
We are going to learn lots more about being Brazilian tonight. From the point of view of transgender people, Brazil's public health system provides free sex change operations. That's very advanced.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I hope they're of a sufficient quality.
Well,
we have our heroes as our plastic surgeons. Like, we are talking about pretty good plastic surgery.
I've heard of a number of celebrities who shall remain nameless, and apparently their surgeons are in Brazil, hence the quality of their work. But, you know, whispers on the internet.
It is known. It is known that we have our heroes. People would name their sports heroes. In Brazil, we name the plastic surgeons.
Wow.
Well, none of us is getting any younger.
Now, Brazil, again, one of the leaders in the world in another area, the federal government of Brazil has a gay plan. It's the National Plan for the Promotion of the Citizenship of and Human Rights of LGBT people. First introduced in 2009, it's got 51 key policies developed from a big LGBT national conference. Everything from the legalisation of adoption, sexual diversity education, moving towards removing restrictions from gay people donating blood. Very comprehensive. From a government to have a gay plan. I couldn't see. Well, we clearly can't see that at the moment.
We live in hope, you know, one day.
Is it important, David, for the government to be so forthright and visionary in that regard?
I think it's crucial. It's about human rights. And we are all people. And it is about human rights. And the great thing on top of this is that we're all Catholics. And so to actually move forward in this space is absolutely even more amazing, because of the entrenched Catholicism and, of course, breaking the rules of being Catholic.
Well, we are going to explore that more with our guest, David Chong.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It is the show that takes you around the globe, but one country at a time. And tonight we've stopped off in Brazil, and we have with us David Chong. Now, David, you are an Australian, born from Chinese parents, lived in Brazil, amongst other places. You're quite a mixed bag of lollies, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Unconventional.
Original.
Yes, very much so.
Now, the majority of your life was spent in Brazil, though.
Yes. My entire formative years has been in Brazil.
Tell us about soccer and Brazil.
My passion for soccer, not, or soccer as a religion for the Brazilians.
Ah, yes. More as a religion for the Brazilians.
Well,
so it's like a Melbourne and the Aussie rules, really, isn't it?
No. Nowhere near close to it.
Really?
Nowhere near close to it. It is incomparable. Aussie rules, people are incredibly passionate, perhaps in the stadium. But when people are out, people are walking, and they are either not celebrating, commiserating. They're just walking out. And in Brazil, people take the celebrations and commiserations outside of the stadium. It is passionate to the point that there is a specific lottery just for the soccer.
A specific lottery?
Lottery. Though you have, a certain number, which is you either win A or B, or you you have the middle one, you know, 0011.
A draw.
And there's a specific lottery, just specifically for soccer, and it is a religion. It is a religion where it's known in certain championships that people die of heart attacks in the middle of the stadium or at home.
And no one would think that was unusual because it's Brazil, whereas here people would be like, oh, gee, they went a bit far.
It's not unusual at all. Mm. It's closer to the All Blacks in New Zealand. Where when the All Blacks lost, there was actually this incredible wave of really depressive episodes that actually mental health had to treat.
People wailing and gnashing their teeth in the streets.
Yeah, full on.
Does that passion translate into violence as well? Is that a part of the machoism?
It translates into passion. Passion can be translated in many different ways. It can be in joy, in love, and it can also be transferred into violence. But it's not exclusive at all. It's more celebratory than actually violent.
Now, the World Cup has shone a very bright light on Brazil, yet there are many people inside Brazil who say that the money could have been better spent. Do you think that the World Cup will have a positive or a negative impact on Brazil?
I think that there is a very, very severe complaint about building infrastructure where there is no need for building infrastructure in certain towns or cities that the money could have been spent in building infrastructure in places where there could be a much more commercial viable. There is a fear of how very similar to what happened in Beijing, the stadiums are now quite unused, and there is a fear that the infrastructure developed in certain places, far north, far east, are not going to be utilized, and there has been actually a lot of waste of money.
Because there is also, I guess, one of the words that has come to the world's attention out of this is favela, which is a slum.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very nice way of saying slum, but it's a slum.
It is very much slum. Favela is part of the large cities. The large capitals would become a magnet for a lot of people that comes from the countryside attempting to have a better life. And because they don't have the opportunities because of this amazing sort of a separation of the class system, they end up actually staying in slums. And the slums have their own sort of level of infrastructure. And many of them, or all of them, have their own types of laws. And they look after each other.
Unofficial laws. This is a hierarchy. You learn your place. Is that what you're saying?
Very much so. And you have also the lords, the drug lords and the crime lords that will look after the favela and give favors and look after their own people.
Can you be gay in a favela?
I don't know. I don't know now. I haven't been there for a while. I don't know now. But it is incredibly heteronormative. So even if you're gay, is, as I was making a comment, is asking chopsticks who is the knife and who is the fork. that's actually Ellen's commentary.
Okay.
And but it is very much within a parameter and a structure that's quite rigid. So what is the gay? You know, who is the man, who is the woman, and those sort of things.
Does that also flow to, I mean, we were talking before that being gay is quite accepted and people are quite open about saying that they are gay. Very large proportions of people identifying in surveys and censuses. Yet there's no gay soccer players or football players.
No.
Well, let's sort of in, clarify.
There's no open.
There's no out.
Out. There's no open. Yeah. Yes. There's no out and open because homophobia and heteronormativity, it is still alive and very well. There are laws.
Is it homophobia or internalized homophobia? Is it?
It's both. It's both. We internalize homophobia at the moment that there are structures and non-spoken spaces where homophobia exists. We only internalize something that actually exists in our community, in our society, in our family. So although the laws are protecting, there are really spaces that really constrain people.
From your time in Brazil, did you experience homophobia?
Oh, very much so, and an enormous amount of internalized
homophobia. What forms did that take?
It takes into forms of one's not accepting one's sexuality the way that one loves. So I became
like verbal abuse or
No. Actually, I have never been abused in being gay, because it doesn't happen many times overtly. It happens very subtly. That's what I say is an unspoken, is what's in the air. So, of course, you become bisexual. You know, you're not gay.
So bisexual's okay?
Oh, yeah, bisexual's okay. You know, and depending if you are the active or the passive person, you know, who is the top, who is the bottom, you know, because there is that parameter of the heteronormativity. So the man is okay, the woman is not quite. We, for many years, had a transgender being the sex symbol. And it was cool, you know. And guys were actually being envied.
We're speaking with David Chong, and we are exploring gay life in Brazil.
This is Otton Bata from LGBT Center of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on Worldwide Wave.
Where tonight we are in Brazil, and we're exploring gay life in Brazil, the World Cup, and machoism. And we had a chance late last year to speak to Evandro Meyer, Mr. Gay Brazil, about being macho in Brazil. So he was in the running. This was actually the final day before announcement, so he was all a bit excited, and they'd just come from doing a sporting tournament with the local police, of which he said they were hot, but he also enjoyed the experience. This is Mr. Gay Brazil, Evandro Meyer. Evandro Meyer, Mr. Gay Brazil, you come from a very macho culture. How is it being a gay person in Brazil?
Actually, now is the best time to be gay in Brazil, because we were fighting for our rights, and now the government, like, they signed a law who let us marry and adopt kids and be ourselves. Like, we don't have the kind of big problems you used to have. People in Brazil, we're really fighting for our rights, and we've been recognized for the society. Now it's a really good moment to be a gay guy in Brazil. There's no stigma anymore, like, you can be whatever you want.
Do you think things like hosting the Olympics in Rio coming up has made a difference in the way people might be more open, more tolerant of people from different cultures or sexualities?
I hope so. Like, we were waiting for this opportunity to host the Olympics and the World Cup. Now the government really wants to be the next country who hosts the Mr. Gay World. So we kind of open minds. And I really think the games will be a good thing for Brazil.
As Mr. Gay Brazil and perhaps Mr. Gay World, what would you do with your title? How would you help rights in your country or around the world?
Well, I'm an athlete. Actually, right now I'm the only one UFC fighter who's open gay in my country. I know a lot of other fighters who they are gay, they're afraid to come out the closet. And I'm through the sports. I really want to show the world, especially the community, we can be proud of us and be whatever you want, whoever we want to be. You don't have to be afraid. Like, when I started to compete 10 years ago, all my colleagues, they said to me, this is not something with a gay guy can do it. This is you can't do that because you're gay. This is something for macho men. This is something for the straight guy. I said, no, you can't say what I can do, what I must do, what I can't do. I'm gay, I'm proud of it, and I'm going to do whatever I want. And I'm going to kick your ass in 10 years, probably.
Now, I heard that your trip here started off on rocky grounds. You had your shampoo confiscated. Has that caused problems for you?
Yeah, the police in Brazil, they keep my shampoo. I didn't know the size of the bottle. And, you know, I love my hair. I love the... I'm gay. What are you expecting for? I really want a good shampoo for my hair. So they keep my shampoo, and now I'm using the shampoo of everybody. I say, dude, can you borrow me a little, because I don't have it? That was the only issue. This has been the best time of our lives. This is amazing.
And that was Mr. Gay Brazil, Evandro Meyer. That last bit there, the shampoo was confiscated. Vanity, is that a part of Brazilian society as well?
Oh, no, yeah. Surely not.
Not that we have...
all those shy little wallflowers mincing around at Mardi Gras.
Or on the beach. Or having heroes as the plastic surgeons.
Absolutely. It's obviously a nation of little sort of, you know... shy little mousy types.
But he does have this very strong sense of hope that things are changing, that there has been significant change lately, and he's and the World Cup and Olympics be positive. Do you share that? Do you see changes going on?
Very much so. Even in novelas, which is the soap operas in Brazil, there has been gay models who were not psychopaths or completely depressives in primetime television, where they were showing love and just simply love.
To the point of, you know, romance, and how far will they go?
Being
their
together,
kisses?
They
and
were,
do we see tongue?
That's too much detail. The issue is really talking about the notion of hope. It is not hope, it is happening. And as in anywhere in the world, there's a lot to do. But it looks good.
Now, part of what you do personally here in Australia is help Portuguese-speaking people to, you know, be a part of Australian society. Tell us a bit about that.
I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm a director of CAPA, Centro de Atendimento Psicológico Australia, which is a Portuguese-speaking counselling service. We look after Portuguese speakers, with or without Medicare, and we are now five psychologists or psychologists getting the registration in Australia. And we are really working quite hard with a very high demand, with a lot of overseas students, as well as newly arrival, as well as people that has been here for quite a while.
Is dealing with sexuality one of the key issues that you deal with those clients?
It has been present, but it's not the major issue. Major issue has been more about adaptation, about arriving and the sense of self in a different country.
Now, you are the star, the one-man star of a show, or star of a one-man show, I should say.
Two-man show.
Two-man show.
Yeah, my guitarist, Nathan Slater, is supporting me.
Okay, so the show is called Acrobat, A Dining Room Tale. Now, this is a show with you and 16 people in the audience that go into a house and share a meal with you and some music.
It is an initiative of A's for Atlas, the theatre company that offers people a different experience of art, being able to access art in a way that is unconventional. It's much more interactive. And Acrobat is the third of the series. And you were saying that you've been
to Cherry
with Neda Rahmani.
I had a ball.
It is a wonderful, wonderful formula. And the formula is come to home, hear one's story, and also eat our food. And also experience the art that we offer. Neda is an amazing singer, percussionist, dancer. And in Acrobat, it is a place where you come to a place, to a home, you will listen to my story, I will be singing your songs, as well as eating some amazing Brazilian-inspired food. I actually have written two new songs specifically for this performance.
Wow. This is such an intimate type of theatre. Is it? I guess if you're performing on a stage, you've got your own defined space. Everybody knows what to expect. If you're in somebody's kitchen, it's a little bit different. The rules are gone. There's not much of a protection. Tell us, is that easier or harder as a performer?
Oh, it is way, way different. The process is that you do the work in being intimate with people by feeding them, by talking to them, by singing for them. But there's no separation in stage. You are right on the table with them, talking to them, telling you your story. Amazingly amazingly exposing, but amazingly intimate as well.
And music is a big part of, well, not just Brazilian culture, but a part of your life as well. How did you get involved in music and particularly jazz?
I was, I had the privilege to play with Doug DeVries and Diana Clark. They had a vocal ensemble of Brazilian music. And I just kind of like, oh, yeah. Vocal ensemble, Brazilian music.
The hips started to shake.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Was easy to move. Was easy to move. When they decided
I've got to say, we've got evidence of this because we've posted a photo on our Facebook page of us having a little dance in the studio. So
very
go on Facebook,
so.
Have a look.
when they decided to end the project, they encouraged me to start a band. And I started a band called Tatu Rei. T-A-T-U-R-E-I. And the band is actually very strong. We now compose our music. I'm the lyricist and the music person. Nathan brings in everything together, which has been an amazing experience.
As far as Brazil goes, what have you brought from Brazil to Australia? What's the legacy that lives on inside you?
My culture? Well, my culture is a mixture, is everything together, is Brazilian, is Chinese, is Australian, is middle class, is gay, and everything in between, is being a psychologist, a psychotherapist, and being a migrant twice over. So what I bring to from Brazil is about the ability to welcome people, the ability to use my body in the way that Australians might not necessarily use, and the ability to sing.
And you can add Radio Star to that list. We've loved listening to you tonight, as has Dean, who sent a message in. Dean Beck from Word for Word, who you spoke to on the radio on the weekend as well. Really enjoyed chatting to you and loving listening to you talk about your other homeland tonight.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being a part of our show and sharing Brazil with us tonight.
From Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
That was so much fun.
It was.
He
was
almost as much fun as the World Cup.
Yeah, David was fantastic. That was great.
Now it's a time for our worldwide wrap. It's where we take a look at the stories that have been buzzing around the world throughout the week.
Yes, and let's go back to Brazil with some, well, perhaps not as positive news as we had previously. FIFA will not punish anti-gay chants, but will investigate underwear. So FIFA, which declared homophobic chants by Mexico fans at the World Cup to not be a problem, has turned its attention to a far more serious matter, which is Brazilian soccer star Neymar being spotted wearing a pair of blue man boxers, picturing his country's yellow and green flag against Cameroon on Monday. However, the problem is that Blue Man is not a FIFA World Cup sponsor.
So it's not that he's wearing flashy underwear or anything, it's not endorsed.
Well,
underwear.
FIFA are very concerned because he's not wearing the correct underwear. So the 22-year-old soccer superstar is now being investigated by FIFA because they're claiming it violates its disciplinary code.
Can I volunteer to be the guy that checks that everybody's got the right underwear?
Something tells me that there's going to be plenty of people within FIFA who are happy to do that, but I'm sure you can join the queue. Anyway, the code bans players from displaying religious or political messages as well as publicity slogans and, this is the important part, non-FIFA sanctioned products. Earlier this week, FIFA ruled puto was not a homophobic slur if used in context, and this is despite Mexico's own National Council to Prevent Discrimination saying its most common English translation is trigger faggot. Warning, faggot. So some have defended the use of the word, saying in context it only means man whore and not faggot.
Oh, that's so much better.
That's fine.
Look, across to Toronto for some happier news. So World Pride is on in Toronto at this very moment, and hello to all our Torontoans. And as a part of World Pride, they've had a mass gay wedding. 115 same-sex couples from across the world married in a free ceremony as a part of World Pride 2014. Photos galore on the various news websites around the world, and a really beautiful way of celebrating in a country that has legalised same-sex marriage. For Australia, though, the good and the bad. Now, the UK recently legalised same-sex marriage, and an Australian couple, or an Australian and UK couple, were the first in the world to be married in a British consulate.
And they looked fantastic in their matching kilts. They looked like $1 million.
Peter Fraser and Gordon Stevenson married after 19 years together, and the British Consular General said it was one of the highlights of his posting to Australia.
Oh,
unfortunately, bless. They step outside the gate and the marriage means nothing, but that's something that will perhaps change here in
Australia. It's only a matter of time. That's happy news, but let's move on to the sad news. Israel's education minister says gay people shouldn't try to call themselves couples or families. So he has said that same-sex couples should not try to consider their households as families, as it conflicts with his religious beliefs.
Ah, well, that'll always win the argument, won't it?
Yeah, look, we've heard that many, many, many times before here on World Wide Wave.
But wait, he says economic rights, shared mortgages, the right to order and so on, that's fine. You can have all the bad bits, you just can't have the good bits.
That's exactly it. So when it comes to paying the bills together, that's not a problem. But he says, I think it's a Jewish state's right, maybe even its duty, to say to same-sex couples who decide to live their lives together, that's not a family. Well, who gives a toss what he has to say? Not anyone here at Troy.
Now, across to the Vatican, where there is a big discussion going on about the place of gays and lesbians under the new Pope, Pope Francis. There is a document circulating seeking feedback from Catholics around the world, Instrumentum Laboris. It's a working paper posing a whole lot of things to help guide the bishops in their next synod on the family. And one of the issues in the document suggests that the bishops ask how the church can receive people in same-sex relationships in a more welcoming way. So it's not going quite as far as saying to talk about relationships, it's just how to be less hateful, maybe? However, widespread opposition to same-sex marriage and adoption of gay people from Catholics, particularly in Eastern Europe and the developing world, remains a problem still to be overcome.
And let's move straight on to another headline. Religion linked with higher gay teen suicide risk. Funny that. Gays who were counselled from a religious leader were more likely to attempt suicide than those who sought no treatment at all, a new study has revealed. The Williams Institute has found LGBTI people who received therapy from a medical professional were no less likely to attempt suicide than those who did not seek help, but assistance from faith-based counsellors were associated with a higher suicide risk. So, so there you go. That's a bit of a downer.
Of course, if you're not feeling quite well, Lifeline is always there for you here in Australia, 13 11 14, or our very own gay and lesbian switchboard here in Melbourne. But some good, sort of good news. Good news across the globe from Croatia, where there is a vote to occur on civil unions for gay couples. It's been in the pipeline for quite a while, and they're finally ready to put it to the vote. Unfortunately, Finland is not setting the trend. They have again voted against gay marriage, being the only Nordic country not to provide gay marriage.
Well, someone always has to be different, don't they?
That is our worldwide wrap.
This is Ulrike Lunacek, member of the European Parliament and co-president of the Parliament's LGBT intergroup on the World Wide Wave.
It's a World Wide Wave. Tonight we've been stopped off in Brazil, and a huge thank you to David Chong, who's performing in his two-man show, Acrobat, A Dining Tale, where you get dinner and a feast, and also to Evandro Maiar, Mr. Gay Brazil, for speaking to us.
Absolutely. And a big, big thank you, of course, to our Facebook friends. So messages from Chris, Joe, Brian, Alex, Angel and Kevin, who have joined or interacted with our Facebook page this past week.
And let me tell you, since we posted this photo of David and I lambardering in the studio, the likes are just ticking along there. So go to World Wide Wave on Facebook. A special thank you to Greg tonight for his help with our music and throwing in a few good ones for us. Now, we've got some happy and sad news. This is our last show at the 8 p.m. slot Monday. We are off to 7 o'clock Tuesdays, a little bit earlier, so we can catch countries on the other side of the world and speak with them. Our first show next week is East Timor, exploring gay life, and there is gay life in East Timor. We also have a roaming reporter. Christine has left us. She's gone off to Mozambique to work in the area of human rights, and all power to her, but she's promised to speak to us from there. the other side of that, Squirrel is coming back to join us, which is fantastic.
So it's kind of like happy, sad, happy, sad.
Yeah,
so, but
yeah.
I can guarantee
hugs
that
all round.
Now that Chris is in Mozambique, we can assume that gay marriage will be legalised within about a fortnight.
She's onto it already. That's catch you Tuesday at 7 next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.